I'm contradicting the kind of shortened narrative, right? So what I see happening through the retellings of Ranjan Dorji's story is this kind of short form of his and the other Karmapas' lives, so that they're reduced into being kind of photocopies of each other. And that always struck me about when they have the Tanka lineages up on the wall. So they have like one and the next and the next and the next, and the actual individual lived experience is kind of a bit lost. There's something very reductive about that. He chose to be born in order to help. So therefore that lived experience is supposed to be a demonstration to other people on how to live. Getting rid of that is actually more insulting. You know, reducing that to a single image is actually more insulting than paying respect to it, that lifetime in a more in-depth way. The complicated choices and the moral judgments and the sacrifices that had to be made by embodied beings is more, to me, it seems more respectful than just putting the people in a line and reducing them to a photocopy. He's doing something quite radical, right? He's a low-born, landless, not deserving of an education in a worldly sense person who has this idea that through this kind of gift of being recognized and the kindness that his teacher showed him, a whole world opens up to him that would never have opened up to anyone else in his situation. So in some ways at that stage, it was shaking up society. It was a radical transformation of power structures were working at that point. I don't see that happening now. I see a certain sense of entitlement. I actually think that the Tulku system is even really kind of harmful to the good guys. Like, I remember I used to work as an interpreter, and I remember one ring Tulku saying to me, they had been, the local monks had come and said that they were a Tulku, and their father had said, "No, you're child thieves. You're not taking my son." That even if you have special qualities, that being in that situation isn't necessarily the best way for them to come to the fore. There was a lot more restrictions on their behavior than there is in the West. And in some ways, that actually remind me of like drunk Australians in Bali, or I'm guessing drunk Americans in Mexico. In that they've gone into a situation where their like power and wealth and status enables them to do things, but there's not the social restrictions on that behavior. So if you did this in Tibet, someone would lock you up, right? And you wouldn't have access to the same people. I interpreted for about seven different tulkus and lamas and geshis and so on, and six of them gave me instructions on how to deal with sleazy teachers. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they told me sutras to quote and lines to use if someone said that, you know, that they're awakened and we should have tantric sex, and I was supposed to say, "Well, you may be awakened, but I know I'm not." As the Tulku tradition developed, there was lots of corruption. There was wars. There was all sorts of things went on. But there was also social structures that developed in order to contain that privilege. And what we're dealing with is situations where that privilege isn't contained. It's a very different world, and it means that, you know, keeping people in a situation where their life choices are decided at age three is very intensely problematic. And then they're also, you know, there's all things about them being, like, not just as abusers but as abused and things as well. So
it's,
It's very different from what I'm looking at historically. It was a break. It was a development that loosens society as opposed to tightening patriarchy.